Drive My Car, which he did a couple of years ago, and he has several albums out, so if you like that kind of music, that's what he does. We also make a few podcasts. Any .NET Rocks listeners in the room? All right. And I also make an IT show called Run As Radio, says I'm an equal opportunity podcaster. Thanks so much for coming out this morning, guys. I hope you're not having too much fun in Vegas. It can get a little distracting. You've got another full day ahead of you. A couple of things to call out. Anybody getting an Xbox One today? So that's tonight at the exhibit hall. We're also going to be giving away the cruise today at 6:15 p.m. sharp. So please be on time. And we'll be doing the draw for that. And that's all the housekeeping I've got. Again, these are your sessions. Go to the ones you want to go to. Try something new today. There's many, many things to see. I know our Xamarin sessions will be doing especially well because enterprise mobility is incredibly important, and that's a big piece of the keynote today. I'm here to introduce Brad Anderson, the corporate vice president at Microsoft for enterprise mobility, so I'll bring him up here right now. Come on up, Brad.
Thank you. All right, it's great to be here. I think Vegas is kind of becoming my second home. I think it's the fourth time I've been down here to participate in an event. It's great to be here, though. I really love the opportunity to get out and be able to meet with people, meet with individuals like you. And what I thought I would do here is just give you some insights into some of the things that we're doing as we think about what does it mean to deliver, to build, and then to operate these enterprise mobility and security solutions. I'm going to walk you through some of the things that we're doing. I'm going to walk you through some of the things that we are building, that as you're building your applications, if you're developers or if you're the IT and you're operating it, help you understand some of the things that we're doing that'll help you, and then talk about how these things come together. Now, first of all, just to give a little context, you know, I really do believe these trends that we're seeing of cloud, of mobility, are really the most transforming trends, the most impacting things we've certainly seen in our lifetimes. You know, we've gone through these different trends where there was, you know, mainframe to x86 to the web to, you know, just go down through these different trends. These two are linked, and I think that they're the most impactful things that we'll ever see in our lifetime. And I think about our own engineering teams at Microsoft, just how fundamentally different it is building products for the cloud as opposed to building products on premises. How we build for mobility and how users use these mobile solutions, it just fundamentally transformed not only what we do, but how the individuals and organizations that are using our technologies use them. And so, you know, there's so much research on this, and organizations that embrace and lean into these trends and really get after them are the ones who come out leading. And so one of the messages that I always, you know, try to convey is your organizations, your personal careers, your personal capabilities will all be enhanced significantly if you understand what these trends are that are unstoppable and lean into them and embrace them early. Now, as we talk about these trends, and certainly as we talk about cloud and as we talk about mobility, the number one concern that every organization has is security. And we're going to talk a lot about security. And one of the messages that I want to make sure resonates here is we can no longer think about security as an afterthought as we build. For far too long, what we've done is we build capabilities, we build apps, we build services, and then we kind of throw it over to the wall, and IT then takes care of it. And IT has to figure out how they're going to assemble some kind of an add-on on top of what has been built. The attacks are so sophisticated. The attacks are so targeted. They are so relentless, humans can no longer keep up with it. And so we have to fundamentally think about security in every bit the same way that we think about reliability, about quality, about serviceability. If security is not at that level in your organizations as you develop and then certainly as you operate, it has to be a change. Now, what fundamentally makes this hard is the ways that we have traditionally protected and secured our data are no longer effective. What we have done for decades is we have built perimeters around our companies, and then we've used those perimeters as the primary way that we protect the company data behind. But now, as the data moves to the cloud, as the data moves to mobile devices, it's outside of that perimeter, and the ways that we have protected the data for decades is completely ineffective. We have to think of a new way to protect and to secure. So I love history. So let me just kind of walk through kind of an example of how defense in the 13th and 14th century had to change, and then we'll relate that to today. What you're looking at here is the Bamburgh Castle. This sits in a point in England, in northern England, and there's been a fortification that is set on this point for more than 2,000 years. In the 13th and 14th century, this was the most secure place on earth. Its defense mechanisms, you know, the royalty could have all of the population, all the treasure in there, and this castle was impregnable. And then something happened. In the year 1464, during the War of Roses, the Earl of Warwick attacked this Bamburgh castle. After 9 months of making no progress at all, he changed the strategy and he brought cannons. Now, cannons weren't new. And you can imagine that at this point in history, no castle had ever fallen to cannons, ever. And so you can imagine, you know, the guards in this castle in, you know, year 1464 kind of having this Monty Python moment of like, you know, yeah, bring the cannons. There's no way you're going to have any impact. These cannons were different. They could be fired from long distance, and they were incredibly accurate. And they were lobbing 300-pound balls of granite. In June of 1464, these three cannons started firing and systematically just tore down the walls of the castle, and the castle fell. The first castle in history to fall to cannon. Now, the first question everybody had is, how do we build stronger castles? But the reality is, old defense technologies were no match for new attacks. At the same time, the population was getting to the point where you could no longer house everybody inside of this castle. And so organizations fundamentally, you know, this kingdom had to fundamentally think about how they protect in a different world where just building fortifications could no longer ensure safety. And it's the same place we're at right now in our organizations. Whether you're developing software as an ISV or whether you're developing software as a part of an organization or your IT operating it, the traditional way of doing a perimeter-based security is no longer effective. We have to fundamentally change how we think about security. And as we're going to talk about throughout the morning, we believe that we have to move from a perimeter-based security model to an identity-based security model. Now, as I mentioned, these attacks, you know, one of the great things in the role that I get to play at Microsoft is I get a view on these attacks. It's really quite remarkable when we take a look at these. You know, we've been pulled into all these attacks that you've read about, whether it be Sony. Actually, you know, Scott Guthrie, who was here yesterday, was actually executive on point for Microsoft as we helped Sony understand what was happening to them. And the reality is nobody, no organization has the expertise, the resources, or the time to keep up with these attacks. We have to start using machines to fight and defend ourselves from these attacks. Now, what I wanted to give you a view of is what we're doing in the cloud and some of the things that we're doing to help you, whether you're running in our cloud or whether you're not. I want to give you some views on some of the things that we're doing. You know, Scott showed you this slide kind of as the construct of how we think about our cloud. You know, there's work that we're doing, whether it be in our productivity apps, in business apps that we're building, that you're building, in, you know, in application innovation and security, as well as in, you know, data. All this is what we think about coming together and forming the Microsoft cloud. You know, we think we have this comprehensive set of capabilities that, independent of what your need is, can be serviced with our cloud. Now, I know Scott showed you a video yesterday. It kind of showed you the building of one of the data centers. I wanted to give you a little perspective on kind of the size of these investments. This is one of our data centers here in the U.S., okay? So you can see there, you know, that row of buildings on the left-hand side of the screen is the data centers. Now, I want to call your attention to the bottom right of the screen. That's a truck that you see down there, just to kind of give you an idea of the size of this. Now, you can see behind this, it looks like there's some construction going on. Let's pivot around and let you see what's being added to this particular data center. Building out these public clouds is not for the faint of heart. The amount of money that we are spending every year to build out these data centers is just off the charts. You know, as I watch every single day how much capacity we're having to add around the world, and the number of new data centers that we're opening, it is absolutely mind-boggling. But it gives you unparalleled capabilities. There are things that we can do up in the cloud that we've never been able to do before. They're going to help you, again, whether you're a developer or whether you're an IT organization. You know, Azure today has got 34 regions. We're opening up more, it seems like, every week. We take the view that there are some data centers that we're going to operate. There are other data centers, for example, our data center in Germany, that we don't operate. It actually is operated by T-Mobile. And we have to do that because the sovereign laws in Germany require that not even Microsoft employees operate that data center. And so we're doing the work and giving you the platform to develop on it and then host your services on that takes into consideration the unique needs of each country, of each geography, so that you can develop your applications once and then let us help worry about all the regulations, all the compliance that you have to have to be on. Now, identity is the absolute most important part of what I think you need to be concerned about, whether you're a developer or whether you're an IT professional. And in fact, as we talked about with that Bamberg Castle example, we have to move from a perimeter-based security model to an identity-based security model. You know, there's some fascinating data points on this, but identity has become the new control plane. And if you think about it for a minute, the only thing that is common for a user, whether as they're accessing cloud services or whether they're using their mobile devices, is their identity. It is the one thing that translates and goes across every single device. Now, we know things like the root cause of over 75% of these attacks that we all read about eventually trace back to compromised user identities. So one of the most important things you have to think about is, what is your identity solution that you're using? You know, these are one of those fundamental decisions that you make early on as you're developing. It's one of those fundamental decisions that you make, you know, from an IT perspective, that again has a huge dependency on that first line of code that gets written as you start to build out an app. Let me give you some fascinating data points on phishing attacks. There's some research that's just been completed that helps us understand how vulnerable and susceptible people are to phishing attacks. And the most disappointing thing of the most recent data is the percentage of people that fall for these attacks has actually increased. So here's what the latest data says. When a phishing attack makes it through the defenses, 30% of the individuals that receive the email will open it, 12% will actually open and run the file, and they'll do it within 4 minutes. So how sure are you with what you're building, with what you're operating, that you can guarantee that it's only the people that should be accessing the service are accessing the service? How confident are you that it's not somebody masquerading as an appropriate individual because they've compromised or purchased somebody's user account and password? Okay, I think this is the most fundamental thing that every one of us has to think about, because identity is what unlocks the world, but it also is the primary attack vector that every attack comes through. Now, if I was making a bold statement here, I would encourage every organization to think about, there's one of three organizations to base your identity on. And I say that because these three organizations spend billions of dollars every year to make sure the identities that they're hosting are protected, and that's Microsoft, Google, and Facebook. As a developer, as you're building your applications, when you make that decision, are you going to build your own identity management solution? Are you going to federate with somebody else? Are you going to integrate with one of these platforms? Integrate with one of these three vendors, one of these three providers, because we're doing the work to make sure that your identities are secure and safe and protected. But it's a really fundamental thing that I think you have to make those decisions very, very early on. And so what you have to have then is the ability to be able to identify those signals, that pattern that may point to a compromised user account. Now, let me walk you through some of the things that we're doing up in the cloud to help you here. I want to describe to you something that we've just, you know, are putting into production right now called the Intelligent Security Graph. Now, what I want you to envision for a minute, I want you to envision all of the services that we build at Microsoft, whether it's a consumer service or an enterprise service. We have more than 200 of them. Outlook, Azure, Xbox Live, Office 365. And what I want you to envision is every single piece of signal, every single piece of telemetry that comes into Microsoft now coming into one place that we can then put to work for you. So in this intelligent security graph, we take these 200 services that we operate, and all that telemetry, all that signal comes, and we put it right back into this thing. We take the 1 billion PCs that we patch every month, and every signal that comes back from those billion PCs goes into the intelligent security graph. And you'd be amazed what we're able to see every single month as we watch the attacks. And we watch how they morph, we watch how they change, but we learn from it. You know, we actually service over 300 billion authentications every month, and with every one of those authentications, information comes back, and I'm going to talk to you more about this in a minute. There are things that we do with every single one of these authentications that help you to understand the risk that is associated with every user. But everything that we get from those 300 billion authentications goes into the intelligent security graph. You know, we scan more than 200 billion emails every month looking for malware and malicious URLs, and everything we learn goes into the graph. You get the idea. You know, and even with Bing, we take the 18 billion pages that we scan, and all that goes into the graph. But what this then builds is this builds this incredible environment where we have so much data. We have data on attacks, we have data on malware, we have data on authentications, and all this comes together in a way that it now gives you this palette with machine learning and data analytics and artificial intelligence that you can use to make sure that the identities are who they say they are, the people are who they say they are. And this is just fundamental, I think, to everything that we're doing. Now, what I wanted to show you here is I wanted to give you a view into this intelligent security graph and give you two kinds of ideas to think about, again, whether you're IT or whether you are developers. And so let's give you a view on this. And so we're going to go to B here, everybody, if you can go to that one. And of course, I got to put the right password in. Okay, so what you're looking at here is the Azure dashboard. There's two things I want to show you here. The first thing I'm going to show you here, this capability called Azure Privileged Identity Management. One of the quintessential challenges every organization has is you have individuals who have administrative privilege who don't use it and it's not necessary. So what we have done here with this administrative privilege capability is we can actually help you see who has administrative privilege, who's using it, and who doesn't. And so right here, for example, I can come and take a look and I get these alerts and it says, for example, hey, you know, there are people who have administrative privilege who are not using those rights. And so the question has to be raised, well, why do they have administrative privileges? And the reason why this is so important is you have to make sure that anybody that has this kind of rights is protected and you want to minimize it. So here I can see there's these five individuals who have not authenticated and used their administrative privilege in the last 30 days. Likewise, I can come down here and you can see things like in this global administrator, there are 12, and there are five what we are called eligible to, eligible is kind of a funny word here, eligible to have their administrative privilege removed. And so I can come and take a look here. It'll show me everybody. It'll show me, you know, are they permanently administrators? With the new Azure Active Directory as well as Windows Server 2016, you can make individuals administrators for a period of time. So you have just-in-time administration, and then that admin privilege can be removed. But you have the ability now, and again, this is important if you're in DevOps and you have, you know, people who are checking in or your IT, you have to make sure you understand who has administrative privilege, are they using it, do they need to have those rights, because these are the targets that the attackers all go after. Now, the other thing I want to show you here is how we're putting this all this intelligent graph to work for you, and we do this through this Azure Identity Protection. Now, this right here literally is a pane of glass and a view that goes into the intelligent security graph. So the first thing you can start with here is we can show you the kinds of events that we see as we're watching the user accounts and what risk they have. And so if you take a look here, I can see things like there's risks like users that have leaked credentials. These are user accounts that are currently up for sale on the internet. One of the things that we do, our digital crimes unit, is we go out and scan the world's paste bins looking for identities that are up for sale. And then we can actually surface those identities up to organizations and show them, here are the five identities that have gone up for sale. You know, you can buy these identities for anywhere from $500 to $1,000, but that's a high risk. If we see that users are logging in from devices that's anonymizing the IP address, for example, using a Tor browser, we assign that to be a medium risk. The third item here, if we see individuals that have authenticated in two different physical locations in a time frame that's impossible, that's a medium event. But what's going on here is every time a user comes up and uses any of the services that are managed by our identity, we actually are tracking a risk score with every single identity. So for example, you're building an application that's going to be used by enterprises, and that is being the authentication is being handled by Azure Active Directory. Every one of those identities has a long-term risk score associated with it. And as we watch these events that come in and we watch the attacks that are happening, we're able to move those risk scores up and down. Then what that allows you to do is you can then go build policy, access policy based upon risk. So I can come and take a look here and first of all see which user accounts have risk. And I can go, for example, I could click on Liz, and Liz would show me the four reasons why we've classified her user account as high risk. And the most important one there is that top one. We know that her user account is up for sale right now. But the beauty of this is you can now actually go in and build policies. And so you can build policy that says, I'm going to require that if a user has high risk, you know, and it could be low, medium, you know, you can define what you want that to be, I'm going to take the following action. I'm going to take action of I'm going to block access or I'm going to allow access, but I'm going to require the user to change the password or I'm going to require the user to do a multi-factor authentication. Give you a great example. Last night I got here. I got up to the hotel room, I brought up my laptop, and I went to start doing my work, and the first thing that happened is I was challenged with a multi-factor authentication. So the logic backing all of our identity said, hey, Brad's working in a place he normally doesn't work in, and probably have like the if in Vegas rule. And so I got an MFA, and what happened is it just asked me to, with a thumbprint on my phone, to validate that I was Brad. You know, I'll be in Europe in 3 weeks, and as soon as I land in London and I go to do my work, the first thing that's going to happen is going to ask me for an MFA challenge to make sure that I am who I say I am. But the beauty of what we have built here and what you want to need to be thinking about is you want to have the capabilities like MFA, and you want it to be automatically applied, but you've got to do it in a way that doesn't get the user tired of seeing them. The worst experience a user can have is if they're constantly challenged when they shouldn't be. And so you have to think about this, again, from the first moment you start coding until you're actually in deployment. How do you build security natively into your solution in a way that users love and is trusted by IT? And that's one of the core precepts that I think everyone needs to be thinking about is how do we build solutions that are loved by users and trusted by IT? Okay, so we can go back now to the presentation. And so one of the first things I would encourage you again to think about is make sure that you're building security protection natively in and you're taking advantage of capabilities like what Microsoft is providing in this intelligent security graph. You know, the responsibility that we all have to making sure that the data, that the information that is stored and accessed in the applications that we build, the primary door into those applications is through identity, so you have to make sure you do a fantastic job of that. Now, the next thing is, you know, we do the best that we can to protect, but you know that there's going to be things that get through. You have to live in a world where you assume breach. And so you then also want to have capabilities that are able to detect things that are out of the ordinary or detect things that users are doing, guide users to work in the correct way and to protect the data, but also have the ability to be able to detect when something is out of the ordinary and then take action. Now, the reason I picked this graphic is I think about what users want. Users want to be free. Users don't want to have anything that causes them any kind of a friction, a speed bump. They want to have beautiful experiences that are simple, they're delightful, that enable them to just achieve. And so the concept here is how do you build solutions and deploy solutions that seamlessly are able to guide users? You know, one of the fascinating data points here is 58% of workers have said that they know that they have accidentally sent documents or data to people that they shouldn't have. And let me give you a great example of this. Back when I was running Windows Server and System Center, my counterpart at Dell was also named Brad Anderson. I mean, here I thought I was unique, right, with a name like Anderson. Every week, one of Brad's directs would be in Outlook, and Autofill would put my name in rather than his name, and I would get emails that were destined for him that would come to me. It's accidental data leakage. And so we have to build things that help guide the users, but it has to be seamless, because if a user feels like the experience is a bolt-on and it's not just a seamless experience, man, they get frustrated and they try to figure out ways around it. And so just like a beautiful car, where you've got, you know, safety built into it, security and usability has got to be built in from day one. It's got to be engineered in. I'm going to give you some examples of this in a couple of minutes, of how we built our Office mobile apps. But you have to think about how you build this in a way that it is fluid and it is intuitive and it's simple for users to comply with. Now, as we think about users, there's three kinds of users we think about in the enterprise. First of all, we think about the users who are the good corporate citizens or who try to do everything that they can to do the right thing. Okay? This is 99.9% of the users that we build for. Increasingly, our users are having to share more data. So how do you think about how you help protect the data when it's mobile? And then finally, there are the people who have malicious intent. You have to think about all three of these, but what we build for is one and two. We build and deploy for one and two because we want to make sure that the people who are doing the work have that great experience, but then you have to have technologies like the intelligent security graph backing you so when these people that do have malicious intent come in, we can make sure that you're able to detect it and then take action. Again, so you protect and you build protection in from day one. You then also want to make sure you have capabilities that are able to detect when something is happening, guide the user, and if necessary, take action. Now, let me give you a view of some of the things that we've done as we think about how we guide the user. Now, I'm going to start with an iPad, so we're going to start over here on A. Now, I've got a standard iPad here, and just got the, I got the Office application. I have a number of applications on this. Now, what we want to do here is we want to give the user the ability to be able to use their device how, where, when they want to. But we want to do it in a way that guides the user in how to make sure they're protecting the data. Okay. Now, one of the challenges that we had with the Microsoft Office apps is people use these apps in both their personal life and their business life. Now, this may not be a challenge many of you face, because most apps are either personal or their business. Very few straddle both lives. The Office apps do, the browser does, Adobe. There's a handful of apps that straddle both. And so I'm going to walk you through what we've done here, and then help apply to what we would like you to do as you do this as well. And we'll talk about how this also applies into Xamarin. So one of the challenges we had is, how do we know when a user is working on a corporate document and automatically apply data loss prevention policy to that? But then likewise, when a user is working on a personal document, we need to honor their privacy and stay out of it. Again, building a solution that's loved by users, trusted by IT, or trusted by dev. And so you can see here, I can open documents from multiple places. The way that we have built this is by default, anytime a user goes to open up a document that required their corporate credentials to get access to, we assume it's a corporate document and we automatically apply data loss prevention. So I'm gonna go open this business plan. Because it's coming from OneDrive, which required my corporate creds, as it's opening up this document, it's now automatically applying data loss prevention to it. Okay? So I've got this plan here. Now let's say I wanna go do things like I wanna try to save a copy of this. So I'm gonna go and try to save it out to say Dropbox. But what happens is we detect that the user's trying to save it to a place that is not a corporate approved location, and we guide the user to take care of the data. Now the only reason we're able to do this is because the security and management has been built into the app. So the Office mobile apps all ship with all of Microsoft security and management that we've delivered through this, what we call the Enterprise Mobility and Security Solution, natively embedded and built into the solutions. This is all built into Xamarin. And so as you're using Xamarin and you're building your applications, as you finish up that and you build your apps, you can have them automatically be enabled to have this kind of control built into the applications. Now, I talked about users want to be empowered. So users expect to be able to do things like copy and paste between applications. And so if I come in here, and let's kind of show you some of the things that we've done. I'm going to select all this content. I'm going to put it on the clipboard. Now, we've put it on the clipboard because this has been built in by the engineering teams. It's on the clipboard, but it's encrypted. And only applications that are enabled to understand that encryption can open it. And so now I'm going to go back over and just go to Outlook for a minute. So I'm in Outlook, I'm in my corporate email, and I'm going to go write an email here. And just like you would expect and what users would expect, I can paste that data in and everything works just as if it's planned, just as they want. But again, we're trying to detect and guide the user through their actions. If I go do this now, but instead of being in my corporate email, I switch to my personal email. Now when I go to paste that information in, paste isn't an option. So look at how we're able to guide the user on how to protect the company data. The user's empowered because they can copy and paste across corporate uses. But if they try to do something like put corporate data into a personal app, they're guided not to do that. And again, the only reason we're able to do this is because we're building all these capabilities natively into the applications. You know, this is not the kind of thing we've had to worry about for the last 20 years with Windows. But in this mobile world where everybody uses their device for both personal and corporate use, we have to think about how we separate corporate things from personal things, how we apply protection to corporate things, but stay out of the user's personal life. Okay? So as you know, I'm gonna talk a little bit more about this, but as you're looking and thinking about how you build those native experiences across Windows, iOS, and Android, you have to continually take into consideration the fact that you wanna be able to guide the user to protect the data. And the only way to do that in a seamless and delightful experience is to have it built in from the ground up, not bolted on after the fact. Now, let's go back over onto my administrative console over here to B. I want to show you where all this heads to. So what you're going to see here is as we switch to B, is you're going to see this is an administrative console that today is in preview. It's in private preview. This will go in public preview, you know, near the end of the calendar year, and then early next year, it'll be released. Okay, can we switch over to B there? Thank you. And what this is where we have brought together identity, management, and security. And as you're building these things natively into your applications, all of what I'm going to show you here can automatically be applied. So the concept here is we believe that organizations are moving and they're changing the set of verbs that they're using as they empower their users. Historically, as you think about how users have been managed, they've used tools like Group Policy and Config Manager, where we just basically, you know, the device becomes domain joined and we lock it down. Where organizations are moving to, from developers all the way through IT, is they want to be able to express a set of rules that govern access to the resources and then have the system be able to enforce those rules in real time. And they want those rules to be based upon risk. And so I want to understand, is there risk based upon the identity that the user is coming in with? Is there risk based upon the device that they're using or the application that they're using? And I want to be able to, in real time, be able to determine if I should allow or not access to the service and the applications and data based upon that risk. So what you're looking at here is the new administrative console. And again, this is part of our management security solution that we build for Microsoft. And now what I can do is I can actually go and build a very, very sophisticated policy. So let me walk you through how all this works. So first of all, I can go in and I can get very specific on the apps I want this to apply to. It can apply to all apps, or I can actually go in and have this apply to specific apps. So let's say I want to go and apply this to just Exchange and to SharePoint. Here is where I think is one of the most magical things I've ever had a chance to work on. I can now express in policy and rules the access requirements to get access to this case Exchange and to SharePoint. So I can come in here and first of all start with user risk. And again, this is part of that intelligent security graph where we have that score of risk associated with every single identity. I talk about that long-running score, but we also can do a real-time determination. We do this a billion times a day right now. Anytime any user comes up to access any service that is being managed, where access and authentication is being managed by Azure Active Directory, we do a real-time determination of the risk at that second in that environment of what the user and device and app is presenting. So I can come in here and say, hey, I'm going to build a policy, and I can say if the user has medium risk, I'll allow it through with certain conditions. I can then go in and say, and from a device perspective, I have requirements. I'm going to allow these operating systems to be able to access the service, and I'm going to have these requirements. Like, for example, with iOS, I'm going to say I require version 9.3.5 or above. That's the version that resolved the Trident issue that we saw get reported on iOS 6 weeks ago. I can get as specific as saying which apps I'm going to allow to access the service. Am I going to allow it to be accessed from a browser? Is it only native apps? Is it only apps that are being managed by the corporation? I can get as specific as saying network location, you know, on a corporate network, not on a corporate network. And then you're going to see our partners fill out this blade here. You know, partners like Lookout, who's giving us anti-malware and vulnerabilities on iOS and on Android. But you can now get explicit and express the conditions based upon identity, device, app, location that you will require in order to get access to these services. And then you can come out and define the conditions. And so you can say, I'm going to block access or I'm going to allow access, and I will allow access if these conditions are met. So this is work that we do in the back end with Azure. And it's all based upon this intelligent security graph where we have all of this knowledge, all of this data, all this risk analysis that we can automatically apply to anything that you build or you operate. And so I made that statement early on about as you're developing your applications, there are some fundamental decisions that you have to make. And one of the most important ones is what identity are you going to use? And you want to have this kind of technology backing your security models. Again, whether you're in development or whether you're in IT, protecting the identity, making sure that you're super solid and being able to guarantee that only the users who are authorized to access are the ones accessing it is just a core part of everything that you need to do. Okay, let's go back to the PowerPoint if we can. Okay, so we talked about protect and making sure that you're protecting the front door. We talked about detect. And the importance in both protect and detect of having these things natively built into your solutions is paramount. Okay, to kind of give you some more idea on this, we've had a chance to really dive deep into this particular issue that got reported on iOS because, you know, we're an investor in Lookout and we're a strong partner of theirs. One of the fascinating things about this, and I don't know if everybody here has had a chance to look at this, But this was software that was developed by an Israeli company who's actually owned by a venture capital firm in Silicon Valley. 250 employees. This is enterprise software. I mean, this vulnerability, this attack was enterprise software. Since this has come out, you know, there have actually been invoices published, one of them from the Chilean government, where they went and purchased, I think it was 300 licenses for $8 million. There was volume discount. There was software assurance and maintenance, 24/7 support. And so it used to be that if you had IP or you had something of value that others wanted to attack, they had to have the capabilities, the skill set to attack you. All they have to have now is money. All they have to have is money, and they can go out and purchase on the market capabilities that are sophisticated, that are targeted, that are, and it's backed, just like Microsoft backs our enterprise software, these attacks are backed by enterprise organizations. And so we have to just fundamentally understand that as we're building our applications, and Scott went through a bunch of the building blocks yesterday about how you can use Azure, my focus here has been on what we're going to do to make sure we give the users that great experience and at the same time build in the security. Now, as you're thinking about the apps you're building, you really kind of have three approaches you can build. And left to right, you know, historically it's been less cost, but less a less delightful experience for the user. You know, you can build web apps, you can build native apps where everything is, where that code is all platform specific and there's no shared code, or you get to the right model, which is what was so attractive to us about Xamarin. And so with Xamarin, you get to this point where you can literally have a significant amount of your code that is shared across the three platforms. You know, we actually use Xamarin as some of the technologies that my team builds, and it is so awesome to have 60, 70% of your code common across all the platforms. What it does to your cost, what it does to your agility, what it does to your ability to rapidly get out rich, sophisticated, delightful applications in a way that is cost-effective and quick. Xamarin is fundamentally, I think, changing how we think about how this should be done. And I love talking to Nat and Miguel about this because, you know, back when they formed Xamarin back in 2011, 2012, if you think about back to then, everything was going towards, you know, everything is HTML5, everything's going to be web apps. And they said, you know, no, we actually think the world's going to go native apps. They're going to want to have those rich applications on each of the platforms. And so they went against the grain when they formed Xamarin. And I think what they did has just been incredible. And so, you know, if you haven't had a chance to spend time with them, I highly recommend that you do that this week and start using it. It's been a godsend for our team. Scott mentioned this again yesterday, but you know, one of the remarkable things about Xamarin as well is just kind of the pedigree of organizations that are using them. And I think one of the things that all of us look for is, okay, we've got a great solution, tell me who's using it, you know, because I want to make sure that it delivers what it needs to deliver. So I think everybody can be super, super secure and confident that Xamarin delivers a great solution. So we talked about protecting at the front door, we talked about detecting the ability, or the ability to be able to detect, guide your users as well as be able to take action. But you also need to be able to respond, okay? The picture here that you see is actually a picture of our digital crimes unit. Okay? It's actually a photograph of the organization and some of the space where they work at. This digital crimes unit is fascinating for us. They've got a pretty, maybe you could call it a lightweight charter, protect Microsoft, protect the world. All in a day's work, right? It's fascinating what they do. They actually get trillions of pieces of data from billions of devices every single month. And they bring into us understandings, knowledge, intelligence, trends about what is happening that we're then able to build into our capabilities, build into our technologies, build through the machine learnings, the things that help us to protect, detect, and then ultimately respond. I love this quote from the FBI, you know, and this is from James from that former FBI director. There are two kinds of organizations. Those who have been hacked and those who haven't admitted it. You have to assume breach. You have to assume that the work that you have done, whether it's building an application or whether it's deploying an application, you have to assume that you've been breached, and you have to have the capabilities that help you identify the patterns, that identify the attack. And there really are a handful of questions that you always want to be able to answer. How did it come in? Who did it attack? How did it spread? And what's the impact? Because ultimately, when these things happen, you have to be able to, as quickly as you can, be able to get to the root cause of what has been seen, what has been stolen, what's the impact of the company, what's the impact to your company's customers. Now, what the data on this tells us is when a breach occurs, it's over 200 days before most organizations actually identify that there has been a breach. And then it takes over 90 days to even find to find out what the impact is. And while that's all happening, you know, there are all of these compliance rules that when these attacks happen, if customer information has been stolen, you have a responsibility to announce that to the world and announce what you're doing about to solve it. So fundamentally, you know, as you think about what modern security is, what modern risk is, what expectations are of our end users or customers that are using the solutions that we build and deliver, giving them confidence that we have built everything to protect the company, to protect our customers' assets, is every bit important, if not more important, than the other illities that we've focused on for so many years as an industry. Okay? And so some of the things that we've done here have to do with all the signal and the telemetry that you come back. But also one of the fascinating things here is when you dig into how these breaches get in, more often than not, they come in through a door that's been opened that we all know about, but just has not been closed. Okay? And this is where this intelligent security graph becomes so important. Think about this working in the back end 24/7, every second of every minute of every hour of every day, protecting your organization, protecting your creation, protecting your engineering, protecting your services that you've delivered. It's constantly looking at all the data that comes in, and we get in hundreds of gigabytes of data every minute from all these services. And you want this kind of backing behind your apps, behind your services, behind what you're building for the world. Because you cannot do this on your own. And so you want to have machines fighting on your behalf 24/7. And these are some of the things that the cloud has enabled us to do that we've never been able to do in the past. So let me give you a view of a couple of things that we do here. And I wish I had so much more time on this because, you know, it's just one of those pieces where there's just so much to dig into this. So I'm going to come back here. Let's go to B, if you would. And I'm going to show you some of the things that we have done from a management perspective of your back end. Okay, so a lot of what I've spoken about so far this morning has really focused on things that we have done on devices, things that we have done on identity. What I want to show you now is some of the things that we're doing on the back end that as you build your applications, you deploy your applications and services, some of the things that we can do to help you. So what you're looking at here is what we call the Operations Management Suite, or OMS. OMS gives us the ability to be able to secure, protect, manage, predict, capacity, all these things on physical deployments, virtual deployments, VMware, Hyper-V, AWS, Azure, Windows, Linux. So you have a rich set of capabilities now where you have a service operating in the cloud that as you're developing and then operating your applications and services in the cloud, and that cloud could be, again, on-premise or up in a public cloud or with a service provider, we have built effectively System Center that we did for the last 15 years, but in the cloud, and it's called OMS. And so just let me give you a little bit of a tour here of what it is that we're doing. And so you can see here, I mean, this is the dashboard, and these dashboards are all customizable. I can see things here like, I can see, you know, are all my devices, do they have anti-malware deployed on it? Are they patched? You know, you'd be surprised at how often when an attack comes through, an attack makes it through because a particular system was not updated with the latest updates, and the attacker just goes through a list of vulnerabilities that they know about, known vulnerabilities, and when they see that there's one of these that's open, they come right in. You know, so for example, I can come here into update management and it would give me all kinds of details about what the configuration of all my servers are. You know, I could take a look, you know, again at Windows, at Linux, and I can get an idea of what the status is of all of my servers with respect to the updates and the security updates, so I know that they're secure or not. You know, the way to think about this is think about being able to set a policy and even have Microsoft set that policy that says, here are the best practices. And then have that constantly scanning all of your systems, all your VMs, all the things that you've built and deployed, and coming back and proactively telling you when there is something that is not up to the security bar that it needs to be. Now, one of the things I love about this is we're also pulling together lots of different information. So I come here under security and audit. And here in security and audit, I'm able to now get a view really quickly of all the things I should be thinking about to make sure that my systems, and my back-end systems, whether it's, you know, physical, virtual, a VM running in a public or private cloud, is secure. And so I can take a look here, you know, over on the left-hand side here, you can take a look at different aspects of it. Let me kind of show you some of the things that we're able to do. I can come here and click on threat intelligence. And again, this is where we're now pulling in information from that intelligent security graph. What you're seeing here on this map, those orange boxes are inbound malicious traffic. Okay, thank heavens on this one, I don't have any red boxes, because that would be outbound traffic, where somebody is exfiltrating data from your organization. But I can come click on any one of these, and it'll actually show me what it is. And so over here, I can see that, hey, we're 50% confident that this, that you are being contacted from a bot called Keybase, and that you've got services, you've got VMs, you've got instances that are being contacted by this and being probed. You can come over here and take a look, and you can actually see the country of origin where these are coming from. Okay, actually pretty representative. But you can actually see now, in one place, all the inbound attacks, all the inbound traffic, all the probing that's happened, and if there's anything that's actually going out of the company. And we do that all through this OMS and the work that we're doing here. I can actually go take a look at my identities. And from an identity perspective, I can now go get a view of what's happening with who's trying to access the back end. So I can see, for example, here, there have been 22,000 invalid username and password pairs that have been passed in. I can take a look at it by user account, and you can actually take a look here and see which user accounts are you know, that somebody is trying to probe. Likewise, you can come over here and you can actually see the logins over time, and you can see, you know, the, from a time graph, successful and unsuccessful authentications. Again, trying to give you the information that you need to have to make sure that you're confident that everything you've built and deployed is secure. And then likewise, you know, the things that we talked about before, things like, you know, the update assessment, the anti-malware assessment, all that comes up in one place. But what I think that this does for organizations more than anything else is it gives you that one control plane that gives you a view. If I go back again to the main landing page here, it gives you one landing page for all the services that you're operating on-prem, in the cloud, virtual, physical, Windows, Linux, and it helps you understand capacity. It helps you understand what's happening with identities. It helps you understand what is happening with, you know, the configurations. Now, the key part about this is you can also take action. So let's go back here into security and audit, and let's go walk you through some things. So I can go take a look, for example, here in identity and access, and I could go take a look at things like, you know, these administrator accounts that somebody has been probing. What this is now taking me into is it's taking me into a log analytics solution. And you can actually see here the actual log events that are these administrator attempts to be authenticated. And you can actually see what the string is here. You can go search on it. The cool part about this is you can actually here go and now create alerts to take action. So right here, you can go do things like, you know, I want to get an email. I want to, you know, want a web hook or a run book. But I can now actually go out and configure automation. And so in this concept of protect, detect, and then take action, I can go out in a policy-driven way with all this information that's flowing into the cloud, all this information that's being collected, and then with the machine learning and analytics of Azure helping you to identify what's happening with your assets, automatically configure that to take action. Pretty interesting. What do you think? Okay, that's the operations management suite. And so those of you who are developing in Azure, as you go up to Azure, you know, you've seen some new things get added over the last several months, like monitoring natively built in for your Azure apps. That monitoring capability is actually part of this OMS solution, and this just builds upon everything that you've seen there. Okay, let's go back to the presentation, if we would. And so the concept here, again, is from the ground up, we have to make sure that we're doing everything that we can to build that environment that is delightful to users, but then trusted by IT and trusted by dev. So where do you get started on all of this? Okay. And the key thing here is you know, you've just got to go do it. If you're not leaning into these trends, if you're not leaning into developing these new cloud apps in the public cloud, that'd be the first place I would encourage you to go start. You know, use your MSDN subscription, start using some of that free Azure capacity. As a developer, as a leader, take your next thing that you're going to build and go do it in the public cloud. At least do your dev test in the public cloud. Even if you have an organization that's a little cloud adverse, You can still go do your dev test up in the cloud and then deploy it on-prem. And that's one of the beautiful things that Microsoft has built with our public cloud. With what we call Azure Stack, you have the ability to be able to build a modern cloud microservices application and be able to run it in your data centers, because we've done the work to make sure that we're consistent across public cloud and private cloud. But the first thing is, take your next app and build it in the public cloud if you're not already doing that. On your end user devices, if you're not taking advantage of capabilities like Xamarin, that's the most critical thing that you can do, because your users actually want to have that great, rich application. They want to be able to use that. So use Xamarin. And then the final thing that I would just encourage you to do is be that leader in your organization that pushes the organization forward. You know, as I interview people for senior roles at Microsoft and in my team, one of the things that I look for is who demonstrates leadership. Leadership doesn't mean you have to be a people manager. Leadership is having a point of view, is having a perspective, and then driving that forward. And one of the great things about these transitions, like you see right now as we talk about mobile and cloud, is it's just wide open for individuals to step up and lead their organizations into the future and to lead them into the places where they need to be, where there may be resistance. So I think it's an opportunity for us, again, whether in IT or whether in dev, to step forward, be that thought leader, help the organization understand what the steady state is going to look like 2-3 years from now, and push everybody forward. And as you do that, the company will excel, you will excel, and you'll bring everybody around with you. Yeah, it's been an honor to be here with you this morning. There are so many things that are happening, and there are so many great things that we're doing at Microsoft, and that's happening around the world. Great events like this right here, you know, give you a chance to get deep into that, and I would take full advantage of every second that you have here. Thank you so much.